disaster of historic proportion. No one can come up with anything that approximates it in the history of our country. And it is important to keep the magnitude of it in mind. The president has also pointed out properly that this is not something that is a 1 or 2 or 5 day arrangement or weeks or months. It is something that to cope with and deal with over a, it would take many, many, many months and into years for this area to recover to the circumstance that it was in. Dick Myers, you might want to comment on this.
This is, you've been around a lot of major activities and looked at it from the standpoint of what's being done now.
Well, if you look at the scope just geographically, if you look at the scope of the damage to the infrastructure that you normally use to respond to these sorts of events, and then at the same time you have to be rescuing and providing aid to the people that are immediately affected, I mean, the scope is just...
There was a hurricane that left millions stranded. This is not just a quote-unquote natural disaster. It's Hurricane Sam. It's almost as natural as the Tulsa, Oklahoma bombing by your friends and forefathers of the black community in 1921. Look, you yap about how this is not a 1, 2, 5 day arrangement or week or month. Well, it took years for the capitalist machine, decades, to erode the levees, evaporate the wetlands, high power warm the Gulf region with global warming, to whip up the intensity of the hurricane. So the capitalist mismanagement of the environment took years. So why fake surprise on the Earth's return investment? Get the hell out of here. It's Hurricane Sam, special edition. Check it out. Slave style. With Skidmark in Santa Cruz, 104.1, Berkeley, 107.5, North Carolina, 106.7, Illinois, Uprising Radio, LUBER.com, the world, RadioForAll.net, the universe, and check out the Slave Web, go Slave Revolt Radio, Google, find out what time it is tonight. We're going to do a special edition dealing with Ruins of Empire and Hurricane Sam on this special edition. We got all that and a hell of a lot more on 103.3 Slave Revolt.
Everything you know is wrong.
Hello, seekers. Here we go again. And hello, especially to the skeptic inside you who might still believe. We'll be right back.
right, you know what time it is. Ruins of Empire. It's a Hurricane Sam 2, still in the storm. And, as outlined in the first edition of Hurricane Sam, this disaster cannot be, you know, laid on the bed of Mother Nature alone, but on the tombstone of finance market capitalism as the engineering force of this capitalist corporate machine that places so little value on human life, on species throughout the planet, the environment, and the planet's overall well-being in general. We're going to highlight some of this and emphasize the need to think outside of the matrix corridors. Because as long as we stay locked within that, we stay locked within a gridlock that will cause us to be flooded out and drowned in capitalist waste. There was a live broadcast in North Carolina, and on this live TV show in North Carolina, Soledad Ryan gives a walkthrough assessment on what is going on still with the refugees. She went through on a Saturday and a Sunday, this past Saturday and Sunday, on the 3rd and 4th. So let's hear her first-hand live account as she walked through Sam's corporate polluted matrix in North Carolina.
But the worst thing they said sometimes was just the sheer volume of filth, having to live in their own feces and urine. No way to get any water or food. This is what it's like inside, and the stench is overpowering. The first thing you notice, smell. It smells like... It smells like dead bodies. It smells like urine. It smells like people who've waded through sewage to make their way out of their houses. And that, of course, is people who lived through that came here. Managed to score some beds. We've seen that every once in a while, taken probably, we assume, from the hotels. This whole strip has a bunch of hotels. They drag the mattresses over. And in some cases, with no possessions whatsoever, left it all behind. Some of the people we spoke to talked about how they would sort of group together for safety. You can kind of see what's left behind here. Kind of like a campsite, kind of camping out, keeping a tight circle. But, and over there, too, and back there, too, and back there, too. Good way to protect yourself. You know what I find strange? There's nobody here monitoring the place. Not just not cleaning it up, which I wouldn't think would be a priority, but there's no National Guard. Can you imagine this place? 20,000 people inside? And then every so often, somebody kind of pops out of the back rooms. Clean up. I mean, someone brought these dumpsters in. Someone's working on it. But nobody's here now. Folks outside, folks you can kind of hear as we walk by, they're waiting for a bus. One of the big complaints is that they won't tell you where you're going when you get on the bus. Some people refuse to get on the buses because they want to know where they're going before they get on the bus. No one will tell them. No one will tell us. It's unclear if these people are ever going to get picked up anytime soon. And we're outside again. Just a mess. And still bodies out here, even on Saturday, late Saturday afternoon. Under this comforter someone has covered up. It's a dead body, and at some point they'll figure it out and move it off.
Alright, now this this is her walkthrough on a Saturday, and then she went through on a Sunday, you know, on the 3rd and 4th. So here she goes through on the 3rd, and it's still this madness is going on. And as she said, it's still a polluted dead zone. And to add to the people's misery, these heathens won't tell the people where they're going. Now, you may have family in another part of Louisiana. You may have family in Texas. But they just shove you on a bus and you can wind up in Utah. The callousness and the disregard for just the basic concerns of these people is extraordinary. But this is what helped create the situation that happened in the first place. As slave listeners know, and checked out on the first post of Hurricane Sam as we walked through the whole issue of what Sam was doing to the Levees, the corporate plunderers, slashing up the Levees, destroying the wetlands, and how the destruction of the wetlands, the size of Manhattan every year, helps intensify the hurricane because the hurricanes don't have to worry about going over the wetlands, which slows the intensity down. 20,000 miles of pipe by these corporations in the wetlands, and the way they carved it up helped the evaporation of the wetlands, along with other things that these corporate plunderers have done that is not within harmony. We went over this step by step in the last show. So they helped create the conditions. They saw during Hurricane George a few years back the vulnerability to the place with the way people were caught in the evacuation debacle, where they had this evacuation set up and people were all stranded out in their cars and stuff. And if Hurricane George had hit, many people would have just been washed away in their cars because the evacuation was so poor. Nagin and all these other sloppy officials, they didn't take the proper measures to put in a proper type of evacuation system. And it's not to be expected. Their priorities are not with the masses. These people are part of the machine. This is why I keep emphasizing that we must, and within our own communities and lock with other communities, our own forms of self-reliance. Places that we have community centers, store bottles of water, store food, store flashlights, store walkie-talkies, store communication setup, hook it up with the local pirate radio stations and so on and so forth. Have generators at the stations, you know, for any possibility. Extra antennas, you know, in this region it's more like earthquakes and stuff like that. So if something does go off, at least we have a counter plan of attack, so that when these lowlives like Nagin just throw their hands up in the air and start shouting on CNN and say they need martial law, which then puts another whole another apparatus of bombardment by the state on us, we are not just completely caught off guard and super susceptible and vulnerable to that plan of attack and control. So here she talks about, as I said, on this live TV, that they don't even tell you where you're going to go. Just throw you on the bus. That just shows you how callous this whole process is. And as she mentioned, there was no one monitoring the place. Because, see, these are disposable people. As we went through in the previous show, to show how this whole situation was set up. I mean, this is just some sick stuff. But this is how the Hurricane Sam, in all of its fierceness, actually plays out in its intensified form on the masses. This is just a microcosm. Now, to show you how cynical this situation is also, you know, we just heard Soledad talk about blacks left stranded, black people, you know, not knowing where they're going to go and so on and so forth. This basically left to die. Now, there's this brother who he sees a school bus you know, it's not of any use. Nagin and, you know, the old raggedy governor, they're not doing anything but this, you know, going on TV screaming and, you know, and asking for martial law and shoot to kill orders. So this brother commandeers the bus and he takes it to the dome and picks up people and carts them off to Houston. Now, check out how this act of courage and commitment is covered.
Welcome them.
Just going straight across, James.
This big yellow school bus wasn't expected to come here, but in an extreme act of desperation, these people all arrived in borrowed transportation.
We went for him, right, Chet? We went for him, we still gained no eyes on the wall.
Why, what happened?
He got the bus gun.
18-year-old Jabbar Gibson snagged it off the streets of New Orleans and transformed it into his own personal motor coach.
And I just took the bus and I drove all the way here.
You drove that bus?
Yep, 7 hours straight.
Have you ever driven a bus before?
No, I never drove a bus.
The teenager passed it with complete strangers and drove straight to the dome. He beat thousands of evacuees slated to come here.
It's better than being in New Orleans. Or it'd be somewhere, we're safer.
But they had to wait before they got to that safe place. It was a long, impatient delay. Children popped their heads out of bus windows. Mothers held tight to their babies. This 8-day-old baby is spending the first days of his life surrounded by chaos. He's now homeless and hungry.
Do you have enough supplies for the baby? Or?
No, ma'am. We're running out of milk.
Authorities eventually allowed the renegade passengers inside the dome. They're safe for now, thanks to an 18-year-old who could find himself in all sorts of trouble for stealing a city school bus.
I don't care if I get blamed for it, as long as I just save my people.
About 60 chartered buses were expected to arrive here overnight. That's thousands of people who will now call the Houston Astrodome home, at least for now. In Houston, Christine Galvan, News Channel 5.
Now here this brother heroically takes people out who are stranded in this death zone. They admit on this show, this news program, that they beat thousands of evacuees. We went over last week on how when all these people were coming out of the dome after staying there in depriving conditions, they let the more well-off economically, quote-unquote, people at the Hyatt, all 700 of them, get in front of them. Now, we played that live last week of what happened. And so here this brother commandeers this bus and takes these people to a form of safety, and they're talking about he could find himself, he can find himself in trouble for quote-unquote stealing a school bus. Now, this is how you can see the whole mindset that when black people take the initiative to start trying to work out their own salvation and not just groveling or waiting, you know, for the state or just crushed by the state or left to die by the state, then suddenly there's a knee-jerk response to start labeling us as looters, as thieves. Look, who the hell else was using the damn bus? Was he supposed to wait for a quote-unquote qualified bus driver to what? Drive him off to school? That's under, you know, 20 feet of water? This is silly. But they can't get past emphasizing black people's need to follow authority, to stay locked within the matrix, even though that whole machine is killing us. This just shows you how warped things are and how dangerous this whole mindset is. Now, also they keep telling the people, you know, they're shoving them out and telling them, you know, not telling them where they're going, just get on the bus and take you off to who knows where. You know, many of these people, when you check out the coverage, they're young and healthy. Now, obviously, there needs to be a lot of work done. These people, when you're young and healthy like this, all you may need is a day or so of some food and some rest, and you're ready to go back and do what you need to do. You know, just go and help start rebuilding. But see, they don't want to use the masses like that. Instead, what happens is Halliburton gets the contract to do their form of farce rebuilding. So, what do we find out? Halliburton gets a subsidiary for this whole Katrina deal. Now, this is they get a $500 million Navy contract to do emergency repairs on the Gulf Coast Naval and Marine facilities that were battered by the hurricane. The subsidiary, Kellogg Brown and Root Services, out of Virginia, was awarded a contract last year, July, to provide debris removal and other emergency work associated with natural disasters. Now, KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root, will receive $12 million for work at the Naval Air Station. Now, this is in Mississippi, and it'll receive $4.6 million to do two smaller neighbor facilities in New Orleans. But see, these guys, this is part of the mercenary corporate apparatus. They overcharge. They are being rewarded off of the profit of misery that their whole corporate structure helped perpetuate and intensify. At the same time, we all know, as we followed the issue of Iraq, how they've been caught involved in all of these shady business practices, where all of a sudden millions of dollars of money go missing in Iraq and all of that type of stuff. They're part of the mercenary force, where they have these mercenary guards and all of that type of stuff protecting their particular interests, and their interest is not within the masses of people. They're the same forces that are in lockstep conflict with the masses of workers in Iraq, the union workers, who they're trying to break down their wages to subhuman wages. This is, of course, the same thing that they would want and expect in Louisiana, in New Orleans, for anyone getting relief. They don't want union-paid jobs. They don't want people educated and developing skills and trades that have autonomy from them. They want to control the whole market system and people, and put people within it who are all already part of their corporate apparatus. So many of these black people, young black people who are already unemployed, who need certain types of skills, this is a ready-made situation. They're local. They know the region, so on and so forth. But of course, they're not going to be used within this apparatus. Actually, they're going to try to rebuild and, you know, just make it some kind of, you know, many of these areas, this is where a lot of the fight's going to be. They're going to try to, you know, rebuild it and make it into some super tourist area in many of these areas, and gentrify, ethnically cleanse large portions of the black population out, because this is how the corporate machine works. Profit over people. So this helps emphasize the sickness that one has to deal with. Now, with all of this silliness in a certain context, Kanye West makes this statement that basically makes clear that he's not one entertainer that is willing to follow the corporate script any longer.
With the way they portray us in the media, you see a black family, it says they're looting. You see a white family, it says they're looking for food. And you know, it's been 5 days, because most of the people are black. And even for me to complain about, I would be a hypocrite, because I've tried to turn away from the teacher TV because it's too hard to watch. We already realized a lot of the people that could help are at war right now, fighting another way, and they've given them permission to go down and shoot us.
And Southold's been even many ways more profoundly devastating is the lasting damage to the survivors' will to rebuild and remain in the area. The destruction of the spirit of the people of southern Louisiana and Mississippi may end up being the most tragic loss of all. George Bush doesn't care about black people.
And neither does anyone else locked within the corporate machine. Whether it's someone from Halliburton, or whether it's Condoleezza Rice or whoever, they're part of the corporate matrix. They're part of the order. Now, this highlights the other aspect. You know, when you see these entertainers on there, and they're doing these relief funds and all of that, it's clear how, you know, it's all scripted out. So when Wes decides to go outside of the script, of course they cut away, they go to Chris Tucker, who later follows the script properly, and you know, Mike Myers is all caught off guard, who was standing beside script and was mentioning some stuff in between a West statement. But it shows how they use these celebrities as figureheads, as images. They're not even saying what is on their mind most of the time. Outside of what Wes did, they're following a script. And the people who write the script is part of the corporate machine. But they use these people to portray an image that people will relate to because of their connection and the way they look up to celebrities. See, it's all to bring you within the machine. It's all to keep you in lockstep. See, this is why we have to create a situation. When these types of situations and others happen, we have forces on the ground in, you know, whatever region of the country. And we're not just pushed out. And we help set our own relief setups and stuff like that. Like some of them are trying to do with like the Malcolm X Grassroots Committee and so on and so forth. You know, and Malik is trying to do the former Black Panther cat. We have to set our own autonomy and engagement, because everything else becomes manipulative within this machine. And it's just a sick form of disenfranchisement and propaganda at the same time. So while Myers is trying to put this spin on relief effort, you know, you have all these black people who are being shipped off to who knows where. They're not even telling them. They were passing out armbands that were color-coded. They get caught doing this. They give one color code wristband to black people, and another color to white people. What is all of this nonsense? But now, here's another, and this is a truly unscripted celebrity, Sean Penn. And he was bumped into by a New Orleans newscast person by accident. And this was on September 5th. So let's see what Penn had to say and what Penn was up to in New Orleans.
Well, it's down here. It's beyond comprehension. There's a lot of civilians doing an enormously good job. There are a lot. The most important thing is this is not, shouldn't be misperceived as at this point, because we're a week into it, as a search mission. There's a lot of these people that have been able to keep their health reasonably together, but they can't get in here. They're going to get sick, and they're going to die out there if we don't get out there now. We've still got all the, this is going out into the water right now. It's like going trick-or-treating. You come back with a full bag of candy. You go out there, you find people, you bring them back all day long. There's a lot of people out there that need help.
Now, he was saying that he had actually commandeered somebody else's boat and went out and helped pull people out. I asked him how many rescues he was on yesterday, and he said he helped pull some 40 or 45 people out of, you know, the water.
I think it's good to note also that, you know, he is he loves New Orleans. He filmed all the King's Men down here, just got through filming it, so he obviously has an affection towards New Orleans. That's just unbelievable.
And literally, we just bumped into him down there. Had no idea that he was going to be in the French Quarter today. And
is he just by himself? Is he working with a group? How's he coordinating all of that?
He was on the move when we caught him. Clearly, we only talked to him for like 3 minutes or
something.
But, so he was on the move, and it was unclear to me just how many people he was down with or who he was working with, but it sounded like he was with individuals who were helping out, people, members of the community who just had boats and wanted to go look for people, and he joined that effort.
Isn't it amazing that, how many days are we now out from the storm? Seven days out from the storm?
Just a
and
week.
And there's still people to be rescued.
Yeah.
You know, he talks about the people like trick-or-treating. You go back in and you come out with a bag full of candy. Still so many people that need to be rescued.
Yeah, and that was disheartening to hear that that's still going on, you know, so long into this.
All right, now, here on Monday, the 5th of September, they are trying to portray that things are back in order. Here you have Penn and other citizens who are still plucking people out in incredibly large numbers. And what you already see is raggedy politicians posturing and, you know, trying to get in to avoid being blamed and so on and so forth. Yet, and raggedy governors calling for martial law and Boy George coming back again and walking around and acting like he's getting serious and stuff like that. When, at the end of the day, the core of the salvage mission is just being done by grassroots people. You know, here you have Penn, this commandeers a boat. He's down there. And him and others are constantly picking people away. While the politicians are running around doing photo ops, posing, making speeches about how New Orleans will be rebuilt again, and making deals with corporations, the superpower, powerful corporate structure, their masters, to basically pimp the region with, at maximum cost. This just shows you how warped this stuff is, and it also brings to mind that one needs to keep this in mind the next time you hear low lives like Limbaugh attack Sean Penn or O'Reilly. Or, you know, these silly little movies being made, or cartoon or puppet shows, whatever it was, America, whatever, you know, where they're trying to point fingers at or mock Sean Penn. Because at the end of the day, in the real world, he was down there grinding. I mean, that's all there is to that. The actions speak for itself. You know, Penn is down. I mean, that's just clear. And he wasn't even looking for a photo op. They just happened to bump into him. It wasn't like he went to a certain location like Jesse Jackson and then did, you know, some speech in front of the media. Then, you know, he was just out there grinding and stuff. Now, another thing that needs to be pointed out on how people, you know, have to remove themselves from being caught within their own little kind of a narrow ideology type thing. On the same day that Penn is out there commandeering people to safety who've been left stranded, you know, and you got all these cats running around ready to shoot people, you know, if they see him out past the curfew and everything else. What goes on in a part of New Orleans? The gay parade goes on, despite Katharina. It goes into how a handful of diehard revelers refuse on a Sunday to let Katharina's devastation kill their party spirit. So here they are in the New Orleans French Quarter. And, they're, you know, dressed in all their gear and makeup and so on and so forth. And they said that they were determined to fight against the overwhelming despair with a familiar celebration that always begins in front of their favorite gay bar, the Golden Latrine. Now, Matt Minold was strumming, quote, smoke on the water on his guitar, wearing a black and white sombrero. And they talk about how, quote, everyone that survived is here, says Minold. They're saying New Orleans isn't going to be a town again, but it is. And then it goes into another marcher who says that who's been coming to New Orleans for Labor Day weekend extravaganza for more than 50 years, saying the parade has finally gone back to its non-commercial roots. Quote, now it's real again, unquote. They went into Andy O'Brien, another guy, said, quote, everyone's drinking, we're all happy. This is some sick stuff. I mean, here's a crisis that's still going on. There's thousands, literally thousands of people who could need people's help. And you got these cats playing around. Are you so removed from reality and so removed from other human beings that you can't connect? I mean, that's just... See, that's part of an American sickness. That's almost beyond comprehension. These guys are up here playing. While the people are dying, literally blocks down the street, drowning. Now, here we're about to go into what we can more or less call the Negro cover-up game. It's a little clip with Jesse Jackson and a Negro policeman, Eddie Compass. Jackson first starts talking about, you know, the whole global warming aspect and be prepared, and then Compass has a few things to say. So let's check this out.
To you, given the impact of global warming and the flow of these storms, whether it's Houston or New Orleans again, or Gulf of the Mobile, we got more of these days coming our way. And the preparation for defense against these storms, the preparation for evacuation and relocation, the lesson to be learned out of this is preparation for, there's a reasonable chance that this scene will be revisiting us again. The question is, will we have an ark that can survive the storm or the flood, or shall we drown again?
Mayor Nagin has already set up a situation where our officers and all city employees involved in this incident is going to be evaluated medically, physically, and mentally, and some R&R. I mean, you can't say enough about Mayor Ray Nagin. He is the most compassionate, the most loving, the most unselfish man I have ever met in my life. And I thank God every day that he's our mayor.
Now, this just shows you how those people who are still within the system frame things, even if they're saying things that have a certain amount of relevance, like Jackson started off, they still keep you locked within the system. Now, while Jackson mentioned the whole global warming aspect, the reality is that the empire, the American empire, is completely embedded in maintaining the fierceness and the engine of global warming operating. They refuse to accept or to be a part, quite naturally, because of how the machine is set up. Anything that will take this society out of perpetuating this cycle of violence on the environment. They are deeply embedded in the destruction of the ozone, the destruction of the polar ice caps, the destruction of the wetlands, because the petroleum industry, which is a key part of the empire's not only profitability, but it's a key part of their control over other regions. As long as the world is locked into this finite fossil fuel, then they have certain areas and regions to battle their corporate financial market war over to maintain their power of influence over other countries, etc., etc. So Jackson, of course, while mentioning global warming, all he's saying is we need to get better prepared, as opposed to saying, quite naturally, that we have to find a solution to those who are bombarding the earth with their plundering machine apparatus, because he's part of the machine. He's a Democrat. So, of course, he's not going to try to take people out of the matrix. He's just saying we just need to be more adaptable to the onslaught. And his idea of being more adaptable is being more prepared for the onslaught. But, you know, Nagin and all of these people who are also part of the machine, their form of preparedness is basically screaming afterwards. I mean, there's no excuse that any of them have in the real world, because they already knew what was coming beforehand. They had experience of what it was like in the region for hurricane types of hits. The 1969, which we went into in the documentary last week, the hurricane, the George hurricane, the one that happened earlier than the George in the 90s. Some of these were Category 5 near misses. The Hurricane George, if it had really walloped North Carolina, as we went over in the documentary, thousands would have been flooded away because their particular form of evacuation turned out to just be just a complete minstrel show, a Mardi Gras minstrel show. So the preparation, they don't have the priorities of the masses of people in mind. So their preparation for the masses of people is on the low totem pole, as one can see right now, just the way this whole thing has played out. This is how the masses are still in the storm. The only way we're going to get out of the storm is to get out of the matrix. This empire has to be crushed. No more excuse making for these barbarians. They're wreaking havoc all over the planet. They are destroying the planet. So, now what does the little Negro cop say? That Nagin is the most compassionate, most loving, and all this. Thank God for Mayor Nagin. What? Now this just shows you. This is just spinning. He's a cop spinning for some little elected official. Nagin is an abuser. Nagin's part of the problem, but so is he, this cop. They're part of protecting the order. All this shoot on sight stuff of quote unquote looters, when they've looted the planet, they've looted the conditions of the region's health, the wetlands and everything else, to create this situation. Now, here I'm going to play a little bit from Malik Rahim, former BPP member. Now he's a Green Party member. And he gives a somewhat different perspective of Nagin and the governor. So let's see what he had to say. And let's take it from there.
I would have commandeered everything. Greyhound buses, Amtrak trains, school buses, public service buses and had them all filled with people, getting them out of harm's way. That was the very first thing I would have done. And then second, I would ask for volunteers. Volunteers are people that live in the community, that know the community, that didn't need a map to find out where such and such a street exists. And had them to come back in here. I would have my police force to commandeer every boat that was available, because everybody knew the flooding was going to happen. You know, to make sure that people would have been getting out. I wouldn't have left it on a faith-based community. I would have made sure that everybody would have had a means, that wanted to leave would have had the means to leave. Even if I would have took some of these car dealerships and made every truck that's like this one, I would have went in there and took them all. I mean, what's going to happen to them? So what if they messed up? They were going to be flooded anyway. So you're going to lose them one way or another. But it could have got people out of harm's way. You know, there's nowhere in the world I would have put people in that Superdome. Because everybody knew that Superdome was nothing but a death trap. Because if we would have got 30 feet of water, how you was going to survive in that Superdome? I mean, everybody knew this. And then when you start hearing the horror story, last year we had a test run. A hurricane came, but at the last minute it did though. So we had a test run, and everybody knew what needed to be in place. And it seemed like he still got caught unprepared with his pants down. Great nigga. No, I don't have no, listen, the little respect I had for him is gone. Same thing about our government. You know, the little respect I had for her is gone.
They can call
the radio and get them passed. But it was too late. Yeah, but listen. If you get out this car and get under here to work on this car, and I run over you, and while you laying that down, I'm telling you about how sorry I am, what good would that do you? How would you feel? Would you feel better? Well, I'm going to die, but at least he's sorry he killed me. Now you still dead. You know, and that's the part of it. You know, it's too late to be talking about who failed, you failed. Because we played, you know, we elected you to represent us. So if you was waiting on the federal government, then damn, then we don't need you as men. We need to have the federal government run New Orleans. We don't need you. If you can't lead the city in a time of emergency. You know, this one we need leadership. This one we need for the real nigga to come and stand up. You know, not to be on no boat trying to rescue people because you're a failure and now all of a sudden you got a guilt trip. You know, you should have been out here leading everybody by getting them out of the city that could have left. You know what I mean? It just came too little, too late. The governor ain't about nothing. She was just as lost as he was. You know, they ain't know, none of them know what they was doing. You know, and our answer to everything now is sending more troops, martial law. You know, I mean, for what? I mean, there's no reason for it now. Most of the looters, the people that was doing wrong, that was stealing for all the wrong reasons, and done left. Now you just have people here dying that's scared to go in the store to get anything because they're scared that you're going to kill them. She ain't came through here with no compassion. Nothing. You know what I mean? Look how long we've been here. So you tell me she's doing her f***ing job? And how long we've been sitting in this house, son, trying to get ice? Her damn near hour. You know, I mean, so what is she doing? What is Ray Megan doing when he ain't got one place in the whole damn city of New Orleans where we can get services from? And we have to travel this far. Then when we get back to New Orleans, I'm going to show you if we can get to that dollhouse. They got water stacked up down there to the ceiling. And they ain't getting none of it away. You tell me if your house is on fire, And I come out there with, even if I just have to have a bucket with water in it. You are telling me, oh no, you ain't got to throw that bucket on my house. I'm waiting for the fire department. You ain't got to go in there and rescue my children, because the fireman's going to be here in a little while to rescue you. And I want order. You ain't let anybody and everybody that can help you get out. I bet there wasn't one person that was out there that was rescued by a civilian that told people, oh no, man, you ain't got to rescue me. I'm gonna wait till Ray Nagin send somebody here for me. You gonna send somebody. I know that's a lie. I know ain't nobody gonna do that. You gonna jump on anything. And that's the way it should have been done for help. You know? The very first thing he should have done is made sure that the medical assistance that he knew that was gonna be needed was made available. He should have had that in place. He should have had food in place. He should have had water in place. He should have had ice in place. He should have had generators in place. That's something that the city could have done. Even if they had to commandeer them from these stores. You know, you have backup generators in every one of these high-rise buildings. What's in them? People not living in them. So why couldn't he take them? Or he's to put people in them. You know, he didn't do either. You know, it's all about property. Everything is about property. I'll tell you what, look at Cuba. Any time a hurricane, when Hugo was passing through Cuba, and it was about to hit Havana, the Cuban government came through there and took everybody out of Havana. I mean, everybody was safe. They ain't had this kind of madness. So why are we going through it? Cuban government just said that they were willing to offer assistance with doctors. They wouldn't even accept them. Now, you tell me doctors is a need, and when you told me about the people that's dying at the airport. But because of politics, you know, they won't take the aid. You know, it's stupid. It's just straight up stupid.
Now, Malouk does bring up the savagery in the aspect of the Cuba situation, where the Cuban government has offered thousands, or over 1,000 doctors, and all kinds of medical supply to Sam. But Hurricane Sam's not interested, because Hurricane Sam is more concerned about politics, its form of corporate, financial, international politics, than it is towards the masses of people who are the victims of its politics. So it turns them away. Now, everyone knows and has seen how ass backwards this whole thing has been done. And I don't think that's some unintentional situation. So, once again, this highlights that this is not just Hurricane Katrina, this is Hurricane Sam. The political winds, the corporate winds, the influences, the low regard for life that this wretched regime has for the masses of people in this country and throughout the world. Now, this is what I mean by why we have to set up our own like volunteer committees in our regions beforehand and have supplies and things like that set up at local community centers, etc., for these types of things. So that in the same way that Penn and others are going out and rescuing, these things could be more coordinated within the community. The hell with the police. They're part of the problem. The police were there primarily to protect property and follow orders. And who are they following orders from? The property class. That's what they're set up to do. So, going outside of the matrix and not getting caught up within this whole martial law property matrix scheme is not something to sound overly radical or anything. It really comes down in part to one's own survival. The reason why the property class is not going to allow if you go through their particular corridors, people within their high rises, is because they don't want those people in their high rises. Their interest is basically for their particular property. They didn't want all those people up in there, even if it meant that they would have added safety. This is how they think. Now, you know, an article came out, and it talked about how the New Orleans police ended up killing army contractors. It goes, police shot 8 people carrying guns on New Orleans Bridge on Sunday, killing 5 or 6, a deputy chief said. Now, it ended up, as a spokesman for the Army Corps of Engineers said, that the victims were contractors on their way to repair a canal. The contractors were walking across a bridge on their way to launch barges. And the next thing you know, these cops are gunning up people. Now, most likely, if it wasn't for the fact that these guys turned out to be Army engineers, they would have probably claimed them as some kind of looters. And they probably would have made up some kind of story that they had some horrific shootout with the looters, and the looters shot at them, and then they courageously shot back, and that's how it ended. And of course, we've been hyped up on Limbaugh and all these other low live shows. But it just highlights that these guys are just out there gunning. These guys were just going out to fix some, these guys are going out there just to fix a canal, and the next thing they know, they're being shot up by these martial law pigs' bullets. So, this is why I keep emphasizing that this is part of the enemy class. They're not operating within our interests. So I don't have any expectations other than negative expectations from a Nagin or the governor or Boy George and so on and so forth. Dependence on them makes you susceptible. It makes you vulnerable. Vulnerable than we already are, caught up within this wretched system. So, last, let's go into, the human tragedy that's taking place in the complicity, and how it can't be emphasized enough, and how these people, like in FEMA, have been caught red-handed in sabotaging basically what people needed to survive: networking and communication. Here's FEMA sabotaging. Now, this is someone who believes in the system, Aaron Broussard, but he finds this out and finds himself caught painfully paralyzed within the matrix of this fatherland security system, as he discussed it on this CNN broadcast.
You just heard the Director of Homeland Security's explanation of what has happened this last week. What is your reaction?
We have been abandoned by our own country.
Hurricane Katrina will go down in history as one of the worst storms ever to hit an American coast, but the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina will go down as one of the worst abandonments of Americans on American soil ever in U.S. history. I am personally asking our bipartisan congressional delegation here in Louisiana to immediately begin congressional hearings to find out just what happened here. Why did it happen? Who needs to be fired? And believe me, they need to be fired right away, because we still have weeks to go in this tragedy. We have months to go. We have years to go. And whoever's at the top of this totem pole, that totem pole needs to be chainsawed off, and we've got to start with some new leadership. It's not just Katrina that caused all these deaths in New Orleans here. Bureaucracy has committed murder here in the greater New Orleans area, and bureaucracy has to stand trial before Congress now. It's so obvious. FEMA needs more congressional funding. It needs more presidential support. It needs to be a cabinet-level director. It needs to be an independent agency that will be able to fulfill its mission to work in partnership with state and local governments around America. FEMA needs to be empowered to do the things that was created to do. It needs to come somewhere like New Orleans with all of its force immediately, without red tape, without bureaucracy, act immediately with common sense and leadership, and save lives. Forget about the property. We can rebuild the property. It's got to be able to come in and save lives. We need strong leadership at the top of America right now in order to accomplish this into reconstructing FEMA.
Mr. DeSalle, hold on, sir. Shouldn't the mayor of New Orleans and the governor of New Orleans bear some responsibility? Couldn't they have been much more forceful, much more effective, and much more organized in evacuating the area?
Sir, they were told, like me, every single day, the cavalry's coming. On a federal level, the cavalry's coming, the cavalry's coming, the cavalry's coming. I have just begun to hear the hoofs of the cavalry. The cavalry's still not here yet, but I've begun to hear the hoofs, and we're almost a week out. Let me give you just three quick examples. We had Walmart deliver three trucks of water, trailer trucks of water. FEMA turned them back. They said we didn't need them. This was a week ago. FEMA, we had 1,000 gallons of diesel fuel on a Coast Guard vessel docked in my parish. The Coast Guard said, come get the fuel right away. When we got there with our trucks, they got a word. FEMA says, don't give you the fuel. Yesterday, FEMA comes in and cuts all of our emergency communication lines. They cut them without notice. Our sheriff, Harry Lee, goes back in, he reconnects the line, he posts armed guards on our line and said, no one's getting near these lines. Sheriff Harry Lee said that if American government would have responded like Walmart has responded, we wouldn't be in this crisis. But I want to thank Governor Blanco for all she's done and all her leadership. She sent in the National Guard. I just repaired a breach on my side of the 17th Street Canal that the Secretary didn't foresee, a 300-foot breach. I just completed it yesterday with convoys of National Guard and local parish workers and levee board people. It took us 2.5 days working 24/7. I just closed it. I'm telling you, most importantly, I want to thank my public employees that have worked 24/7, that burn out, the doctors, the nurses. And I want to give you one last story, and I'll shut up and let you tell me whatever you want to tell me. The guy who runs this building I'm in, the emergency management, he's responsible for everything. His mother was trapped in St. Bernard Nursing Home, and every day she called us and said, are you coming, son? Is somebody coming? And she said, yeah, mama, somebody's coming to get you. Somebody's coming to get you on Tuesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Wednesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Thursday. Somebody's coming to get you on Friday. And she drowned Friday night. She drowned Friday night.
Mr. President.
Nobody's coming to get us. Nobody's coming to get us. The Secretary has promised. Everybody's promised. They've had press conferences. I'm sick of the press conferences. For God's sakes, shut up and send us somebody.
See, this type of stuff, man. See, this shows you how sick this empire is. No one came to get this cat's mother. Left to die. We're disposable to the Empire. We're disposable to this order. To hell with all this congressional hearing stuff. It's going to be a farce like the 911 hearing. We have to take the initiative. We have to create our own salvation. Look, the 911 hearing saw that Boy George was complicit in a lot of this type of stuff, but he's part of the machine. They saw that he was complicit in the Iraq gate, you know, and memos coming out about that. Boy George and his administration had been complicit in Abu Ghraib. They've been complicit in Guantanamo. But Boy George is an administrator to the imperial corporate order. So it's all good as long as the order still stands. And even if Boy George were to step aside, someone else, some raggedy Democrat or some raggedy Republican, would step in as the next person who took the baton for the order, for the corporate masters. Now, as Broussard clearly stated, FEMA was not saving lives. Here they are turning water back. They tell the Coast Guard, who was delivering diesel fuel, they turn that back. They're caught red-handed cutting emergency communication lines. What the hell is this? This is looting. This is sabotage. If they're talking about someone shooting at some little helicopter or whatever, notice how that's what becomes the focus. Some cat running out of the store with a piece of bread. While this Hurricane Sam sabotaging in every aspect you can think of has and still takes place. They're the problem. They are the problem. And what do they celebrate? Our misery is, well, their profit. Oil price topped $70 a barrel after Katrina. It goes into how light sweet crude oil for October's delivery rose $3.50 to $70.70 a barrel on a New York exchange. JP Morgan actually released a report and said that Katrina had already forced a production halt in about 630,000 barrels of crude oil a day from the Gulf of Mexico, some 12% of the daily output. But see, the way the order works, it's not in cooperation with anyone on the planet except this, you know, little satellites, you know, Israel, the government of Sudan, Saudi Arabia, you know, low lives like that. It's basically a Frankenstein monsters. But regions around, Venezuela, it's, you know, battling and so on and so forth. In other words, we don't live in a cooperative world by the way the corporate machine order is set up. So what ends up happening is the machine is able to exploit crises for their own profitability. And a crisis is part of what they create. They perpetuate crises. Like the next crises that are about to come down the pike concerning the crises of available water, of drinking water. They're going to exploit that and intensify that aspect. This is how the order works. This is why the order has to be shut down. One has to drop one's illusion. And one has to realize that as long as the order exists, Hurricane Sam in all of its corporate financial market forms will still continuously be in the storm. Put on a set. a slave tonight. As long as the order exists, we will continue to be under the storm of Hurricane Sam. What needs to be done is we need to deal with our conditions, organize against the order, and burn and loot the system to the ground. Until the next time, slave revolt.
Sean.